We're going to dive in, and I'll begin with just this passage again, because we'll kind of just build off of it. But it says, so then, just as you received Christ Jesus as Lord, continue to live your lives in Him, or continue to walk in Him. So we receive grace, we receive Christ, we receive Jesus, we receive the Lord, continue to walk in His dust as disciples, rooted, built up, strengthened in faith as you were taught, overflowing with thankfulness. So I want to spend some time today just unpacking John chapter 15, really looking at this word and this concept of being rooted. And to do that, I feel like you got to have, just a little bit more context. I want to start just looking at like John chapter 13, and scholars will talk about the significance between John 13 through 17. You know, John 13, it's the Last Supper, and Jesus like eating, and then he gets up, and he basically takes a bowl and fills it with water and a towel, and he begins to wash the feet of his disciples. I mean, it's just unbelievable how Jesus just models what servant leadership is all about. And there really is only one type of leadership, servant leadership. And then John chapter 14 is beautiful. But even in John chapter 13, as they're kind of having and celebrating communion, the conversation begins to take a little bit of a difficult turn where Jesus just alludes to, hey, one of you is going to betray me, which leads one of them to ask, well, who's it going to be? And if you read John 13, it's kind of fascinating because Jesus breaks bread and hands it to someone, Judas, and John 13 says that Judas takes the bread and he leaves. Now, again, it's just such a fascinating, like, he took the bread and then he's like, I'm not going to eat it, I'm going to leave. Like, what does this mean? Now, there is a story in the Old Testament. In the New Testament, in many ways, is like Jewish midrash. It is like commentary on the Old Testament. It's kind of like, you've heard it said, but I tell you. There's like almost like something that's similar yet different. But David, if you remember his story, he had a strategic advisor. Anytime he'd go into battle, he leaned on the wisdom of a man by the name of Ahithophel. No way any of the 8 spelling bee winners would have gotten that word. But here's the word. Ahithophel, scholars say, was Bathsheba's grandfather. Okay? Ahithophel, according to the rabbis and like the ancient Jewish like teachings, said that his wisdom bordered on that of the angels. So that when Ahithophel spoke, man, people listened. But here's the thing. David confided. David trusted. If you remember the old like verse that Jenny quotes in Forrest Gump, when she goes, "Dear God, make me a boat so I can fly far, far away from here." That is it from the Book of Psalms, and it's David basically kind of speaking and praying because he's under persecution because Ahithophel has betrayed him. And Ahithophel has actually sided with his son Absalom, who had really, really good hair. Now, what's incredible is Ahithophel ends up going with Absalom, and David writes these words like, how could you betray me? We shared bread together. Now, quick time out. Jewish context, when you served bread, it would come in a massive, like, little bit of a loaf. And what you would do is the father, the mother of the house, she would or he would break bread and hand it, right? Hand it to the people around the table. If you received the bread and ate it, that meant you were one. You were in community. You were connected. So when Jesus eats with sinners and tax collectors, this is why the religious leaders are so frustrated. I mean, even looking back out there, there's a word someone wrote that God is inclusive, like God includes us. This is what Jesus modeled, inviting people to sit with him and break bread with him. And when they ate it, in Jewish context, it meant we are bound together. We are united. This is why Jesus ate with sinners, because they're like, if you could be bound to me, your life would be set free. That's why Jesus ate with tax collectors. And what breaks David's heart is, I thought we were bound to one another. So in John chapter 13, John actually quotes the psalm David writes about Ahithophel. And when you read that, if you have like some sense of the Old Testament background, you go, oh, it's almost like in film, they call it an establishing shot. What's an establishing shot? Think about the Brady Bunch, you know? It's like they show the picture of the house, so they let you know this is the scene of where it's taking place. So they set this verse, sets the context, and then all of a sudden, you've got Jesus saying, someone's going to betray me. And he hands a piece of bread to Judas, and it says Judas takes it. What's so beautiful is Judas would have ate it. He would have been like, no, 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 I'm not betraying you. I'm bound to you. He takes it and he leaves. It's just so amazing. When we talk about receiving communion and Eucharist, we often do it as a form of remembrance to Jesus, which is beautiful for what he did for us on the cross. Incredible. It's amazing. But we often miss what it really symbolizes is saying, I'm bound to you in death, burial, and resurrection. I'm bound to your kingdom. I'm bound to your teachings. I'm bound to you. It's not just kind of this ethereal remembrance. It's about real life, real tangible life. And this is where Judas is like, no, give me 30 shekels of silver. I love the honesty. He's like, I'm not bound to you. Because I thought your kingdom was going to do this for me, and it's not. So that's John 13. John 14, like, man, he got intense. I liked him yesterday. John 14, Jesus comforts his disciples because oftentimes when you have a little bit of a real honest teaching about where you're going and what's going to happen to you, people are like, what? And so then he promises the Holy Spirit, basically tells them, hey, it's good for me to go. When I go, the Holy Spirit will come. John 15 is the passage that we'll get to in a second. And then John 16, he then breaks down what the Holy Spirit's going to do. And he says this advocate, this counselor, this comforter is going to do three things. It's going to show you where you are wrong. It's going to show you where you think you're right in your own strength. And it's going to remind you where victory comes. So this is what the Spirit of God does. It's beautiful. John 17's epic because it talks so much about just the prayers for the Holy Spirit. The prayers for the disciples and that we would be one, which is so beautiful. But John 15, scholars believe that Jesus leaves the upper room, he's walking through the Kidron Valley, headed toward Gethsemane, and he stops at a vineyard. And if you've ever been to Jerusalem and to this area, you know, it's very possible that he could have easily stopped at a vineyard, and I believe God is a God of props. There's something beautiful about creation. Even as Todd was kind of putting up the list of 12, he saw that word. There's something that happens, like when you look at nature, it's so easy to just do a teaching on God because it's just so tangible and tactile. And Jesus just utters these words from John chapter 15. Many of you know this, but hopefully some of this will be helpful for you, helpful for your marriage, helpful for your life. And really get you to understand what I think Jesus was trying to unpack. It says this, verse 1, I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. I'll stop there. You've got to understand that for Israel, one of their nationalistic symbols was the vine. This was a symbol of abundance. It was a symbol of blessing. You see it in Isaiah chapter 5. You see it in Psalms 80. You see it in Ezekiel. You see it in Hosea. You flip through the Old Testament, you're probably not going to go 10 pages without some kind of reference to a vine, some form of reference to this nationalistic symbol. And this symbol symbolizes abundance. So if you remember yesterday talking about Pax Romana, it was about security. This is what like the mantra was, security and prosperity. Hey, the nationalistic symbol was the vine, and because the vine showcased abundance. Even when King Herod's temple was built, it went from 5 acres in the Old Testament, King Solomon's temple, to over 30 acres. And on top of the top of the top of this temple, there were 6-foot gold clusters of grapes, just to showcase. This is our symbol. It'd be like the flag of your country. It was just, this is our symbol. This is the favor. This is the blessing. And Jesus is saying, no, no, hey, y'all, I'm the true vine. Like that's not it. Even in the temple, that's not fully it. I am the true vine. And then he just says this, and my father's the gardener, which is just awesome. My father is the gardener. So which would make you think like, okay, well, what's this father going to do? Goes to verse 2. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. Let's stop there. A number of years ago, I found myself in South Africa. And if you've never been, it's a beautiful, beautiful country. For some people, they think it's a first world country with third world cities. And some people say it's a third world country with first world cities. But there is some of the most beautiful landscape in all of the world. You get down to Stellenbosch, you get down to Cape Town, some incredible waves. But really, the environment of the mountains, of the temperature, just it makes it for possible for some of the best wine to ever be made. And I don't know where you all are at with wine. It's biblical, so I'm just going to talk about it. So if this triggers you in any way, I'm not like trying to trigger you. I'm just trying to teach the Bible. I don't know, but here's what I want you to see. We go and we start working in one of these kind of like squatter villages, and so we stayed there for a few days, and then there was an orphanage that we began to serve at that was on the outskirts of this squatter village, but it backed up to a vineyard. And there were so many kids that were in this orphanage that we ended up connecting with this massive vineyard next door, talking to it, and they said, hey, don't like sleep on the couch. We've got space here. Why don't you sleep here? And I was like, that's the easiest decision of my life. Never stayed at a vineyard before. And so I found myself sleeping in this vineyard. I'd wake up super early in the morning, and I'd go out with this, like, vine dresser, and I would literally just follow him around. And I was, like, reading John 15, and I was just asking him questions. And I think, you know, you probably have this moment where, you know, every person wants to be nice for, like, 7 minutes to some guy who follows you around. And then you're probably like, dude, stop asking me questions, you know? It's like, I remember reading this book on like fatherhood, and it said, if you want like perfect cabinets in your garage, do it with yourself. Just do it by yourself. Just like, don't have anybody help you. But if you want to create a moment with your kid, do it with them, and just know that your cabinets are going to be crooked and not really work. You know, and it's just like, I just always have thought about this. And so this guy was so kind, like he went so slow and was just walking me through. And there were different seasons with each of these vines, and so he was just telling me. And so I start reading John 15 and asking him questions, and he wasn't familiar with the scriptures. And so he starts engaging with me, I start engaging with him, and he begins to tell me that a gardener or a vine dresser, it's massively critical for them to prune. I said, well, why? What does this look like? He said, vines just grow out of control. They're constantly chasing after light. They will do whatever it takes to get water, and they will just grow and grow and grow and grow. And maybe some of you, not thinking like grapes, vines, but maybe you've seen this in houses. They'll just grow up on chimneys. I mean, they will just chase light, and they will look to grow. And a vine dresser's job, a gardener's job, is to actually have a vision for where the vine needs to go, needs to grow, and needs to preserve the energy. Right? The energy, because there's only so much sustenance that they don't want it just to be kind of splintered out on like 19 or 25 different branches or vines. They wanted to make it go, hey, these are the strongest branches. And so to do that, we got to start thinning it out. And he began to show me. He takes out some shears and he goes, this branch right here, it's taking too much energy, but it's not gonna weather well in a storm. And this thing right here, this branch right here, it's just taking. It's sick. It's not going to create the best kind of fruit. And so I got to cut it off. And he just would cut it off. And I just watched him begin to thin row after row after row. And it made me start thinking, if you look at our lives and you were to look back at the last 6 months of your life, let me just be really, really candid and ask you, is there anything in your life that needs to be thinned out? I mean, we are living in a culture right now that is just overscheduled, overstressed, like over busy. Like literally many of us just feel over it. And it's like we've all been gifted with one thing that's the same. It's 168 hours in a week. And yet, for many of us, we're distracted, we're stressed, we're anxious, we're not at peace, we're scheduled to the max. And we don't have this time. And time has become a currency that's like unlike anything else. I mean, when I lived in Grand Rapids, Michigan, I had moved there from Southern California. I used to always joke, you know, living in Southern California where I was born and raised, you were just in a rush to go nowhere. Like just people like, let's move over here. Like it's just stress upon stress. And if you ever talk to someone from Southern California, you'd be like, hey, we should hang out. They're like, oh, totally, man, that'd be great. You're like, sweet, man, let's do it. That'd be awesome. You would never put it on the schedule because something better could come. You always got to leave your options open. And then you get to Grand Rapids. Grand Rapids, I mean, they're just like, hey, cut me off. It's okay. Just like go in front of me. It's all right. Because they knew, I'm not going anywhere, so why rush, right? And if you went over to their house, I mean, my neighbors, I mean, they were just so incredible. Like, you'd walk over to their house, and they're like, hey, what are you doing? And you if you said nothing, they're like, come on in, let's have some pie, let's play euchre. And then you were there for 3 hours. It's just so different, right? And it was so beautiful. Is there was something about the Midwest where we created space for relationships. The West Coast don't have that. and I think somehow I'm watching that even get lost in the Midwest. I'm watching like sports. I'm watching travel teams. I'm watching pressure for kids. I'm watching work. I'm watching like almost this disintegration of relationships. And I think what's so important for us is to look at and go, what needs to be thinned out? And trust me, I'm not against sports. Like I think there's something really, really beautiful about it. I just think that there is something about our lives being maxed out. One of my closest friends, they have two kids, and in one season, these two kids were on 6 different teams. You know what you call that? Crazy. That's what you call that. It's just like each of the kids on 3 different teams, and like, there was just passing ships in the night. And you sit here and go, there is a full crazy vine growing and all of the units of energy are being spliced. And I think at the very end of it, I don't think it creates the best kind of fruit. Quick time out, maybe for you to think about, maybe for you and your spouse to talk about, maybe for you to even bring before God. Is there anything this summer it just needs to be thinned out so that you can exhale and experience more of God? Anything that maybe God has been bringing to your attention, you know? And some of the best things get cut, like date nights. They just get cut out. You know, and it's just, so like some of the best parts have been cut out so that we can add more branches. The second types of pruning, this is really, really powerful, is something that they call pinching. And when they see a vine about ready to bloom, but if it's going to bloom too early, they go up to it and they pinch it and they squeeze it. And part of it is this thing can't bloom just right now, because if it blooms right now and some storm comes, it doesn't have the strength. The branch isn't strong enough and it won't survive. And so they pinch it to almost hold off. We live in a culture right now where we can watch a band get signed overnight. And the band gets signed overnight, and it like literally just explodes and becomes like just overnight sensation. And I think something in us, whether it's that or Starbucks, where we can literally like get what we want in 5 minutes or less, or Amazon, it's basically saying we're going to drop drones in the sky and drop your package off at your front door for your neighbor to steal when you're not home, but it's cool. But like literally, we are going to get it your way as quick as possible. And yet, I think sometimes this is how we look at our spiritual formation. And the truth is, you cannot microwave your spiritual formation. It takes time. And sometimes the gardener, God, for your own good, for your own benefit, is pinching. It's just holding back. And it's hard because in a comparison culture, some neighbor might be blooming and you might be being pinched. And you're like, that's not fair. Why? That's not okay. Again, I love sports. I'll use a sporting analogy. In high school, our freshman team was unstoppable. We went undefeated. And we had, in my opinion, one of the best high school players in our county. This kid had the most beautiful jump shot I had ever seen. And there were times where I would pass and I would watch him just shoot and I would just find myself just staring, like gawking at how beautiful the shot was, and I would forget to get back on defense. And it was just so beautiful. And like every good coach, when you have a guy who's that good, you bring him up to varsity. The problem was, mentally, he wasn't ready to be the number one guy. You see this happen when some people go from small markets to big markets, and all of a sudden a big market just puts all this pressure on this person, and they just wilt. There's something there mentally that's not ready. And so, by his junior year of high school, he stopped playing basketball. And to this day, if I think a coach would have seen the potential, seen not just the beauty of this, but began to think about this, and pinched it and held off, I think he's still probably, well, I'm too old now, but I think 10 years ago could have still been playing basketball. He was that good. So again, sometimes when we hit a wall for a season, it's actually for our benefit. Now, I think about this. Maybe for some of you, maybe you've been told no. And none of us like to be told no. But maybe there's something that God is trying to shape and do in you, some character flaw that he's trying to work on to prepare you so that when you get to the next phase or when you start to bloom, that like you're actually ready for what God has put before you. Second, let's continue on. It says this, verse 3. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. So I asked this vine dresser about this. I'm like, well, what does it mean? Like, how do you clean? And like, what is this all about? And he goes, man, you got to protect this fruit. And you got to understand, insects are coming. Dust is coming. Dirt is coming. You've got to go and you've actually got to clean it. And here Jesus is saying, okay, the truth is, I'm the vine. I'm the true vine. My Father's the gardener. He's going to thin you out. He's going to pinch you so that you actually can like grow the best kind of fruit and so that you're ready for what he puts before you, but you are already clean. It's like what he's saying is what I've been teaching you, what I've been showing you, what I've been like unpacking for you for the last 3 years, like this has been everything. You are clean if you live into this teaching. And then it continues on and says this, verse 4, remain in me as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. Now, anytime you're reading the Bible and you see one word used 4 times in one verse or 9 times in like one chapter, it's probably a signal important. And this word in Greek is meno, but remains for some of you in your translation, it's probably the word abide. I like the word abide because it comes from the word abode, and abode means to make your home. And so the idea is that when you remain in Christ, remain in the true vine, you are literally making Christ your home. You are finding your peace and your grounding and your center in him and in him alone. And this is so important because what Jesus is getting at is if you remain in me, you're going to bear fruit. Nobody bears fruit on their own. And again, like if you read this, Jesus isn't saying that, you know, you're not going to bear fruit. He's talking about sustainable fruit. He's talking about the fruit that's going to last and outlast you. He's talking about the fruit that's going to be generational, the kind of fruit that's going to be passed down and passed down and passed down. He's not talking about one quarter where you just crushed it at your work. Yes, any of us couldn't do that, but sustainable fruit, sustainable abundance, sustainable overflowing, sustainable goodness being birthed in and from you can't do it unless you remain in Christ. And you can do it for a season. And you can do it when you're hiding a whole bunch of sin. You can do it for like a moment. But for the long haul, Jesus is saying, no. No. You have to remain in me. And then he says this. I am the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. So like verse 4. He just says, remain in me, remain in me, remain in me. Verse 5, he goes back and says, I'm the vine and you are the branches. Which is amazing is I think for many of us in the way that we view Christianity and we view our relationship with Jesus is, no, I'm the vine and Jesus, you're a branch. I think for many of us, we give Jesus maybe a Wednesday night and a Sunday morning, or maybe we give Jesus like 5 minutes in the morning. Or maybe we give Jesus like the last 5% of a decision. But for many of us, we live our lives that really, I'm the vine, Jesus, you're a branch. And you can make your home in my agenda and in my life. And this is what Jesus is trying to get to his disciples. Hey, hey, I'm the vine and you are a branch. You are connected to me. And I want you to bear much fruit. One of the gospel writer John's disciples, you might know or heard of his name. His name's Polycarp. And he changed his name to Polycarp, which literally means to bear much fruit. He changed his name so his name would be Bear Much Fruit, which I just think is amazing. But he just says, like, apart from me, you can do nothing. And I don't know if we really believe that. Like, apart from me, you can do nothing. I mean, you can have a good teaching, you can have good kids, you can make some good money, but really, again, it comes back to, like, sustainability, flourishing, heart of God, intimacy with the Father, the stuff that's, like, so moving and so good and so beautiful. This is what Jesus wants for you, a life that is to the full, to the max, not overscheduled, but just overflowing. And I think when you are rooted in him, when you've allowed God's spirit to remind you, this needs to be thinned out. This needs to be pinched so that you can bear the best kind of fruit. I mean, something's just powerful. What's so moving to me about this time is I just said, hey, from the time when you actually start to till the ground and you put the seeds in for a vine, how long does it take to start bearing fruit? He said 3 years. And Jesus with his disciples for how long? 3 years. And at this moment, he's about ready to like kind of get arrested, go to the cross. And the story of God is now going to be entrusted to these disciples to go and make disciples, who make disciples, who make disciples, who make disciples. And I love it. Like Jesus, before Gethsemane, before being arrested, finds himself just stopping and going, it takes 3 years to bear fruit. I've been with you for 3 years. It's your time to bear fruit. Now, what's also amazing to me, and this is where I'll bring up a bottle of wine. If any of you are sommeliers, I'd love to talk to you. If any of you know much about wine, you know a great bottle of wine, if it takes 3 years to bear fruit, then they take the grapes off and they go through that whole process, which, you know, takes some time. Then it gets bottled, and typically a good bottle of wine will sit on a shelf or sit in a cellar for another 4 years. So you have 3 years kind of from dirt and seed to grape, and then grape and bottle somewhere 18 months to 2 years for like a good, and then 4 years, you're talking 9 years. 9 years till you actually can taste the fruit of a good bottle of wine. And I've just been thinking a lot about this. Because for sometimes, and even like when you get better bottles of wine or like incredible bottles of wine and stuff that I could never afford or have ever tasted, but like you're talking probably 15, 20 years. And sometimes I find myself sitting with people who start to share about something that's really going on in their life. And what I hear them talking about is as if, it's as if God has been just pinching something. And God has just been like holding some opportunity back. Or that God has been thinning out. And they might be in year two. Or maybe they're in some situation where they haven't actually tasted the bottle of wine yet. Or the story that God is writing. And I look at this and I just, my first often response is, that's going to be a great bottle of wine someday. Which for some people are like, what do you mean? And I go, do you see what God is doing? The movement of scriptures, Egypt, wilderness, promised land. And for some of us, we live in a time where it just feels like, man, I'm just struggling. Or then I go to the desert and I'm like, is God really here? And God shows me he never left me nor forsook me. I think that's a word. And then I go to the promised land. And all of a sudden, like, I'm in the promised land and, like, I'm feeling it. And then God's like, I'm not done with you. There's another area in your life. And you go back to Egypt because he's trying to make you whole and holy and spiritually healthy. And so you might literally have this season where you've got multiple bottles of wine being formed and shaped from your life. And in some areas, you're like experiencing blessing. And in some areas of your life, you're experiencing profound levels of pain or struggle. We're going to talk more about this tomorrow. And what I like tomorrow, I'm going to try and have you identify where you are in some specific areas of your life and maybe what the Spirit might be asking you to give a little bit of attention to. And to do that, you're going to need to thin some stuff out. So that's where we're going to tomorrow. But I love to begin to see this process of like God is looking at your life and he's wanting you to bear the best kind of fruit. Now, the reason the Hebrew people had this nationalistic symbol of grapes, because you remember when they went in to spy in the land of the promised land, they brought back grapes, proof that God wasn't lying. And they never wanted to forget this, that God was going to bless you. Bless you, bless you. And the way that the rabbis understood it was like day one and day four were similar, day two and day five were similar in the creation poem, and day three and day six were similar. And just like a tree can bear fruit, so can we. And God is wanting to cultivate in us a life that can bear the fruit of the Spirit. Now, some of us might be sitting here going, okay, how do I do this? How do I do this? And I'm going to get there. But there's one other piece that I need you to see. I think for some of us, we might be able to look at somebody else's life and go, gosh, it just feels like they are bearing fruit. I just look at their life. I mean, it seems like there's just so much goodness that's coming from them or so much love or their life looks so easy. Or maybe sometimes we live with like the sense of shame, like I've messed up or I can't. One of the most beautiful things when you study a vine dresser and you study the vine is this concept called grafting. Now, grafting is unbelievable. And I'm just going to quickly just break this down for you. You can literally go on YouTube and you'll see that I'm not making this up. If you just type in University of Kentucky, which is crazy that they I thought they only did bourbon, but they do wine too, I guess. But like University of Kentucky, and you just talk about a vine dresser, you'll see this. But this is what grafting is. And I just want you to, I think this is so beautiful. What they would do is they would go to a vine and they'll saw off the top. Okay, so it's just sawed off. And then what they're wanting, and this is the language they use, they want the vine to weep and bleed, okay? This is incredible to me. Then the vine dresser gardener comes and he cuts a T inside the top of the vine. Gospel. And he just cuts a T in it. Okay. Then he takes a seed of a grape that you want to graft into this certain vine. That's how kind of how you get like a Cabernet Sauvignon. You have these two kind of blend, right? So you take this, he puts the seed in, and inside the T-cut, inside the wound that they would call it, then they take bandages and they wrap it around. And then it waits for like 3 days. They take the bandages off. Easter, and then it just starts to grow. And I'm sitting here going, are you kidding me? And they, like, God is a God of props. I'm telling you, like, when we were learning from Michael, he's talking about how science points, yes, science points to God. It's so obvious. And so there's this beautiful piece where you sit here and you go, oh my goodness, even in a season that can feel dead, even in this thing that has no life, like my finances or my marriage or a relationship with a family member or my job, or, you know, there is still something where you can literally say, you know what? I need to be grafted into your kingdom. I need to be grafted into your ways. I need your help. And this, if you literally talk to anybody who really does spiritual formation well, they will tell you one of the most foundational aspects to radically speed up spiritual growth and formation is humility. It's humility. It's humility. I learned a lot about humility once. I was in college and I needed a haircut, and so like I went to Supercuts, and they had a long line, like 45 minutes. I was like not waiting, and then went to Great Clips, and they had a long line, so I was like not waiting. And I remembered that there was a salon in downtown Orange County, Fullerton area. I'd never been to a salon before. I'd been to a saloon, but never a salon. And I remember walking into this salon. It was called Ricadonna, which is just awesome. And I walked in, and I mean, my hair was super long. It was a mess. And I walked in, and 1998, 99, I just gave away my age. But anyways, and I'm walking in, and the person, the guy who's at the desk, looks at me and he goes, it's going to be $30. I was like, for a haircut? I'm like, it's a lot of money, but I'm like, I need it. And he goes, $30. I'm like, oh, I can pay right now. I probably don't look like I have money. I'll pay right now. He goes, we can take you. I said, thanks, man. Thank you. I was just like, and I don't know how to feel about myself right now. He goes, hey, can you just fill this out? I was like, I'm not looking for a job. I just need a haircut. He goes, what we need is you to fill this out so that our stylists know what to talk to you about. I'm just like, this is going to be fun. So I just start answering questions based on 80s and 90s sitcoms. And so I sit down, I turn it in, and I'm just there. And then, I kid you not, someone from the Holy of Holies in the back comes walking, calls me by name, like knows me, like Stephen Carter. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And I get up, and it's just, this place is so bougie. Like I don't know how to function in those situations. And I'm already awkward, and this was just going to get more awkward. I'm like, oh, you know me, I know you, what's your name? And we start talking, and she goes, here's what I'm going to do. And I said, what are you going to do? And she goes, I'm going to wash your hair. I said, thank you. And I'm going to cut your hair, and I'm going to style your hair, and you're going to be good to go. And I was like, this is incredible. Wow, they don't do this at Supercuts. And so she's like, but all you need to do is you need to go in this closet over here. And I'm like, what? And she goes, and you need to put on a schmack. I said, a what? A schmack. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, what? Where are you from? The UP? Like, where are you from? Smack. And she's like, go in here. And it's like, and I said, what's that? What's a smack? And she's like, it's a black shirt. It's hanging up. And so all you need to do is like go in here and just put on the smack and then walk out. We're gonna wash your hair. We're gonna cut your hair. We're gonna style your hair. You're gonna be good to go. I was like, this is incredible. And so I walk in there and literally open this closet door and there's one black smack. And so. Take my shirt off. I put on this shirt, and it's very tight. I mean, it's like really, really tight. And the buttons are on the other side. I can only button up to here, and like four chest hairs are showing. And the spirit of Tommy Boy comes over me, and I'm like, I'm gonna break this woman. Like this is, I'm just gonna like make her laugh. And so like I just open the door and I'm like, fat man in a small man smock. And I just start dancing. Like, and again, this place is so bougie. I'm 18, 19. And I'm like, and she's not laughing. And her eyes are bigger. And I'm like, I'm just going to add a little bit more body motion and dance. And I'm like going for it, singing. And then I look over here and there's this most adorable 70 something year old woman with curlers in her hair. And she's looking at me through the mirror. You know how they do that? They look in the mirror. And then she turns her chair, and she goes, what is this young man doing wearing my shirt? So here's what I want you to know. Here's what I want you to know. There are times when you get humbled. And you can't control it, right? But what's so fascinating is when you look at the scriptures. That's amazing. Take you everywhere. I feel better about myself. You got me having the giggles. But here's the thing. Like when you read, so sorry. Then I start to sweat too. The worst. Gosh. 1 Peter chapter 5 says this. It says, "Clothe yourselves in humility." And what it'll say is like all of you humble yourselves, and what's so empower, like so important is I really believe that we've heard this axiom: pride comes before the fall, right? But when you read 1 Peter chapter 5, something so beautiful happens. Peter's saying, and he was there in John chapter 13. He was there when watching Jesus like literally like wash the feet. And when you think about the clothing aspect, when Jesus gets up and he kind of puts on a servant's robe, and there were two types of clothes that they would wear. They would wear this servant's robe or this long sleeve kind of like colorful kind of clothing of honor you tie in the back. Everybody wanted this because it had status, and Peter is calling the church to put on the servant's humbled clothing. To kind of live like Jesus lived every day. And he's saying, hey, this is on you. I can't make you do this. I can't force you to do this. This is you and God choosing to humble yourselves and say, you know what? There's areas in my life where I don't have it all together. There's areas in my life that I need to be grafted in. There's areas in my life that need to be thinned out. There's areas in my life that need to be pinched. There's areas in my life that God is a God in process, and I have to believe Romans 8:28, that all things are working towards the good. All things are working for good. And this is the process that God is at work. But to speed that up, there are areas that we've got to be open, honest, and human and say, I need help. I need help. And in those moments, you begin to root yourselves in the kingdom way. And if you don't, by you saying, I don't need help, that's pride. And pride will come before the fall. But there's another axiom that we never talk about. And when you read 1 Peter chapter 5, it says that God will lift you up in due time. That God will lift you up with a mighty hand in due time, 1 Peter chapter 5. And here's what I began to realize. If pride comes before the fall, humility comes before the honor. And when you humble yourself, the kingdom economic way is that God sees your humility because Jesus modeled that humility. And what God did with Jesus, lifted him up, gave him a seat right next to him. He's like, I'm going to do that with you in due time. You have to trust me. You have to see that I'm creating an incredible bottle of wine with your story and with your life. And truth be told, sometimes we're like, you know what, God, give me the shears. I'm going to be gardener, I'm going to be vine, I'm going to be branch, and I'm going to be fruit. And we look at our lives and we're like, why is it not working? But there's something so powerful when we can humble ourselves, graft ourselves in, root ourselves, abide, make our home in Jesus, really thin out the things that are suffocating our lives, and lean into what Jesus wants to do in and through us. It was amazing. I know we're not supposed to talk about the men's breakfast because it's kind of like Fight Club. but one thing that was really, really beautiful to me was there was a conversation that kind of took place, and I'm probably breaking all the rules now, but who cares? The conversation, really, when I started thinking about this grafting in, was three dads were like talking about like foster care and adoption. Like one guy just starts to share, another guy starts to share his story, another guy starts to share his story that's in process, and all of a sudden you're just watching this, like, and it was just so beautiful, like just, and I knew where we were teaching today, and I just saw this, and like you could see these seeds of these beautiful boy and beautiful girl and like just being grafted into this family, and it's messy and it's unique and it's beautiful and it's profound, but God's doing something. And I just walked back by myself and I was walking back, I just was thinking about that. Like the truth is, like, we've all been grafted in. We've all been like adopted. We even sang the song, Good Good Father, that Jordan led us in. And it's just like, you know, like we've all been just welcomed in. And there's just something so beautiful about that. Again, nothing that we did to deserve that. All we could do is receive it. And when you receive that kind of grace, it makes it a little bit easier for you to humbly say, can you just help me in this area? Can you help me in this area? Because I believe if I make my home in you, the best wine and the best life and the best family is to come. That's my hope for you. What needs to be thinned out? What fruit is being pinched that maybe you're frustrated or angry or bitter about because you're seeing somebody else thriving? But maybe you just need to change your perspective and say, God, maybe I'm in the wild and in the wilderness right now, but I trust you're doing something character-wise in me that's going to prepare me. Maybe for you, you're finding your home in something else, work, finances, some other conversation or relationship or some other, in Tim Keller language, counterfeit God. Maybe the question is Jesus my one and true home? And am I gaining energy and spirit and life and sustenance? And am I holding on to the shears and trying to garden myself so that everybody can see just the best parts of me? The Midwest, we do this very, very well. That's why we have basements, right? Stuff everything in the basement, and we never let anybody go down there. But we just let everybody walk upstairs, stay in the kitchen. They're like, nice house. I know. It's very nice. Just don't go down to the stairs to the right in the back storage room. Do not go in there, you know? And we just carefully manicure parts of our life. And the truth is, God wants all of it. And when you actually have the trust to hand back the shears to the gardener, because you don't fear, you actually believe and revere what he wants to do in you, your life's going to soar. And that's my hope for you. Be clear and honest what needs to be thinned out. Change your perspective. Stay humble, stay humble, stay humble, and watch what God does. Thanks so much.